Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for May 13th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Madrid Open as well as preview the Italian Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the upcoming French Open, Wimbledon, and US Open packages. Let's introduce our co-host for this week, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great and I'm excited, Nima. You know why?
Why is that?
Can you tell me why?
Because you got Zverev as the winner for Madrid?
Of course, because yes. in the era of Nadal dominance,
yes.
Parsa feels a bit bold today in that I predicted Zverev to actually win the title.
That was huge. I'm happy that you carried the torch because I had an extremely poor tournament. Out of the eight semifinalists that I picked, men's, women's combined, I got one of the eight correct, which is... I'm not saying I'm always right or whatever, but I was very, very off. Just quickly to recap.
For some reason, I'm understanding the faster surface here. I got three of the four semis.
Yeah.
Anderson. So it's crazy. I don't even get it.
And that's exactly why you're going to hear a lot of hate talk on Madrid this week. So get ready for that, everybody, as well, too. So just to recap quickly on this week's show, Parsa, we're going to review Madrid. We're going to talk about should Madrid even be on the calendar. Then we're going to talk about, is Denis Shapovalov the Russell Westbrook of tennis? We're going to talk about the women's preview for Italy and then the men's. So that's going to be our show for this week. So Parsa, as we get into reviewing Madrid, pretty good tournament. I mean, there were some high moments. I mean, you know, Dominic Thiem came out just, you know, slashing and bashing the ball, took out Rafa in straights, ending Nadal's 50 straight sets won on clay dating back to last year's, you know, clay court run where he just mopped up and looks like he's going to carry that forward in Rome and Roland Garros. We'll see how that goes for him. I don't think there's any red flags that we have to look out for Rafa. We had Petra Kvitova. What a great story. She continues to be. I mean, she literally almost had her hand chopped off last year. She's coming back, has won four tournaments this year, one in Prague. Really fast turnaround. She comes into Madrid, wins this for the third time. Lots of guts out there. I mean, she took out, you know, Kiki in the finals, and it was like almost 3 hours. Yeah. Birkins, amazing match.
She's definitely back, that's for sure.
She's definitely back. Great to see. And so that was that pretty much. So we had, let's start with the men's here quickly. So today we had Zverev. I know you got a lot of praise for him, what you saw from him. I mean, he just cleaned up such a comprehensive Pete Sampras-esque type of win, looking for only one break per set, and he's beating a guy in Thiem, irrespective of the altitude. I mean, he's coming in there, and I mean, one break every set, 4-4, clean cut, hour and 18 minutes, out the door, won 83% of his first serve points, over 60% of his second serve points. Parsa, check out this stat that I remembered from looking at the box scores. Thiem only won a combined 12 points against Zverev's serve total first and second serve points in 10 games. That's like
wind slams.
Yeah, like that's like you're done, right? How are you going to break the guy? And I know you got a lot of analysis for that because you watched the match in its entirety. So break that down for us. I mean, what did you think about the dynamic of today's men's final?
I mean, the most impressive thing that I saw was just Zverev, the way he was able to get the breaks a serve in a very subtle fashion, nothing dramatic, but he would just you could feel his level raise a quarter percent, a half a percent, and it was just enough to frustrate Thiem. Anytime Thiem made some sort of, error that he just sprayed a ball for one random reason or another, Zverev made him pay immediately. And that was the difference, is that he was just sitting there very, like you said, Sampras-like, searching for the moment of weakness. He pounced, and then he was unbreakable on serve all week long. But what he displayed for me was just elite athleticism, elite competitor, elite, or unique is a better word, in some of the things that he can do on a tennis court, the way he can return serve at 6'6" with the athleticism and the flexibility of his arms, and the way he can still manipulate the ball. It's something we haven't seen. We've seen big guys like Del Potro hit the crap out of the ball, but this guy can spin it and hit the crap out of the ball. So it's like, he can move. So you're just looking at this breed of an athlete that we haven't seen before. And he's 21 years old and only going to get better. And so what I saw this week leads me to believe that this guy's going to win a slam in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and you know what? You look at a guy like Denis Shapovalov, who had an amazing tournament as well, too. Zverev destroyed him in the semifinals, showed that he's still, I'm still the boss of this next generation. And even him, I mean, just taking these massive cuts at the ball, and then you got Zverev, athletic but can move, he's 6'6". This is kind of, I think, where tennis is going. It's going to an even another level, where you had guys like Nadal and Federer, where, good athletes, but these guys are even, it remains to be seen if they win, over 10 Grand Slams like these guys did, but just even an upgraded version. Shapovalov just hitting winners all over the place. For 19, he's built, he's strong. You got Zverev, 6'6". Smashing serves, but moves like a 6-foot guy, kind of like a LeBron James, you know what I mean? Like, big guy, but moves like a small guy. Very impressive. And this is kind of, I think, within the next 10 years where tennis is going. These guys are going to be hitting a ton of winners, but can still move, hit massive serves. They're going to be big, strong guys, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, Hawkeye's got its work cut out for them, because they're going to have to track these shots where they're going to all be over 100 miles an hour, even on groundies. And it's amazing. And I think for me, the biggest thing for Zverev is, like you said, he has to come to grips with his mentality in a best of five set format, because you don't want to become like an Andy Murray. And I say that with the highest level of respect for the Brit, because yes, he's won 3 slams. He grinded to the number one ranking, but he won a ton of these Cincinnati's and Canada's and all of this stuff. And then he would kind of come second fiddle when it came to the big dance. And then he figured it out, and then he's won a few slams, which is great. But Zverev now, in the last year, what has he done? He won Canada. He's defending champion in Rome next week. He's the reigning champion in Madrid. Made the finals of Miami. Lost to Isner. He's going deep in these, right under the slams. But then
he's
going
to be able to handle Nadal's spin, I'm telling you, on clay, Nima.
He is, but don't forget, man, and we're going to get into this debate about Madrid as this bizarro world kind of event where it's, in its own, place because of the altitude. I think from what I saw, spin is not really rewarded in Madrid. And if you look at Kvitova, very flat hitter, 2-time Wimbledon champion, knows how to hit through the court. If you looked at team, don't forget, Nadal destroyed him in Monte Carlo, 0-2, lost to him here. Team did nothing in Barcelona. Tsitsipas took him out there. But team hits team is interesting because people don't look at it like that. He hits actually a pretty flat ball. He doesn't have a lot of, especially on that backhand, man. He doesn't have a lot. And if you looked at him against Nadal, he was hitting that ball flat as a pancake down the line, and it was working. He can't do that on clay. And Nadal likes to give his shots a lot of air, and you could see him not comfortable, man. Like, he was trying to spin it, and the ball would go out by 6 feet. That's not happening at Rome. That's not going to happen, we know, at Monte Carlo, Barcelona, and it's certainly not going to happen at the French Open. That's why, he's beat team there in the last couple of years. And that's what I'm saying. So Zverev, the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, can he do it over 5 sets? I don't know. I don't think he's there yet, in my opinion. And I think that team is still more of a threat at the French Open against Nadal. And I still don't think he's that much of a threat, let alone Zverev yet. And I mean, Djokovic, we'll talk about him, but he's not there at the moment.
I also think it depends on the weather at Roland Garros.
Absolutely. If it's a Soderling type of day, you know, and then the ball's sitting up and he's crushing those flat ground strokes, absolutely. A guy like Delpo, a guy like Zverev can hurt him because they have the firepower just to overpower him. But even a guy like maybe Thiem. But that remains to be seen. We'll get there when we get there. But other than that, I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the men. Djokovic still struggling. Edmund cleaned his clock there in the third set. He's still got a lot of work to do. And he said something, Djokovic, that was, I mean, he's a very spiritual guy, and that's the vibe that he's been giving, this earth, you know, vegan, spiritual vibe that he's been giving now the last couple of years, which is in many ways great, if you ask me. But from a guy who's won 12 slams, been number one for so long, if he's saying, listen, I got to hope and pray that I get back to where I was, is that really what we want to be hearing from a guy who literally dominated tennis for destroying Nadal and Federer, you know, two of the all-time greats in their prime, like no problem. Hostile crowds at Wimbledon, US Open. He destroyed Nadal at the French that one year before he lost to Wawrinka in the finals. I mean, and now he's like, I'm praying that I'm going to fit. Like, I get it, like, but I kind of feel bad for him in the same way. And you know that I've picked Djokovic to finish number one at the end of this year. And my, you know when you throw that, what is that? That like sand clock, and then you look at the sand going through, and it's going to end. You know, I'm almost halfway through the season, right? We still have three slams, and what? You know, we got Rome, Canada, Cincy, two other things.
But he's not looking very good.
Yeah, so I have, you know, a lot of points still up for grabs. We'll see how it goes, but you know, almost half the year is gone, right? So I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of worried for Joker at this point, but I hope he turns it around. Because it's good for the men's game. You know, we're waiting for Fed to get back on the grass. And I think that's pretty much it for me on the men's side. I think, you know, Thiem's going to be bitterly disappointed that he lost today. Because he's never won a Masters 1000. This is a great chance for him. I mean, and he got destroyed pretty much. From Parsa, is it safe to say that 6-4-6-4 scoreline was not as close as 6-4-6-4?
It wasn't close because he wasn't touching him on serve, so there was no break points.
Exactly. Yeah. So
Thiem couldn't just hit through him because Zverev is big enough and can defend it, believe it or not.
For sure.
On the faster surface like that. And so he was resorting to playing clay court tennis, but Zverev was just widened the court too much and was too able to cover too much and hit too big, and so it just was relentless, and there was no chance for Thiem.
For sure. Okay. So, I mean, and then obviously we're going to get into how this week will affect next week when we preview our men's preview for Rome. Just a couple quick things now on the women's final. So we had Kvitova coming through, playing really well. Sharapova showed some brilliance again this week on a faster surface, which I think suits her game as well too, on the clay. What did you extract from the women's side? I mean, we had, you know, Halep breezed through a couple opening matches and then fizzled out, I believe, in the quarters. Svitolina, same thing. Kazakina didn't really do much. Is, you know, can we take what Kvitova did here and is it going to translate now into Rome and then later into Roland Garros? Or is this kind of her clay court season and she's like, I'm good. You know, I've won two tournaments in a row, four on the year. Watch out for me on the grass now. Or is she a bona fide?
I think she's a early favorite for Wimbledon for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. No question about that.
But for Roland Garros, no. I just don't see it. Because there's too many the types of players that can upend her and bother her.
Grind her down. Yeah.
Yeah, where the heavy conditions will really hurt her because they'll make her move too often. And there's too many of those types of players. So it's hard for her at Roland Garros, unless the draw worked out that way and it was nice hot days. It's going to be very hard for her to win at Roland Garros. You look at someone like Ostapenko, who won last year, she can actually hit through the mud. You know, where Kvitova's more like slide the ball around. She can hit big, but it's like big because she's created the opportunity for herself, whether she's moving forward or hit a good serve. You know, there's something that is helping her move forward, where Ostapenko on her back foot can just crush a ball through any speed of surface. So, you know, we'll see her at Wimbledon. I don't think there's going to be much happening at Roland Garros.
Yeah, I think so too. I would, if she gets to the fourth round, I think for her at RG, I think that would be a good result. And I think Ostapenko actually hits a bigger ball off the ground than Kvitova does. Yeah. But Kvitova has a supremely better serve, and she's a lefty. So she does have that working for her. And I think Ostapenko moves...
Which on heavy conditions don't have value. That's
no, exactly, exactly. And I think Ostapenko moves better on clay as well than Kvitova does too. Okay, now, this is going to be an interesting topic. I think a lot of people will enjoy this. Is Denis Shapovalov the Russell Westbrook of tennis? Now, before we get into that debate, my premise for that is Russell Westbrook is this guy, supremely athletic, plays this super flamboyant, the best athlete in the NBA, jumping over everybody, you know, padding his stats, triple-doubles all over the place, loses first round in the playoffs. Never been an NBA champion. Can't really play with anybody else. I know he's a team player as opposed to, but really not a team player. He's more of an individual guy playing on a team. Tennis is an individual sport. Shapovalov is all about himself and he's going to be out there and playing. But the brand of tennis, that full octane, listen, serve winner, return off Milos. Like I saw him, Parsa, Milos is hitting 140 mile an hour out wide serve on the ad side. Shapovalov is taking a full cut and pasting it right on the line. I mean, is it a highlight reel shot? Is it impressive? Absolutely. But is it enough? I know he's only 19. He's got a lot of room now to mature, and he's doing amazing. I think he's actually in the top 30 now. So he's going to be seated at Roland Garros, which is phenomenal. I know all the Canadian fans are pumped. But is this type of game style conducive and set up to become a major winner on a consistent basis? Or is he going to be one of those guys who will play lights out for a week at a Masters, maybe make the semis of a slam? You know, everybody's excited. Oh, I love to see this guy. He hits winners. He's flashy. He's dynamic. He's explosive. But is it enough to be a Grand Slam champion? What do you think?
I think you find out. I mean, you would know better than anyone, Nima, because you've seen him as a kid. You know, what's his work ethic like? What's his disposition like? It depends. It depends on the work he puts in.
I think it's excellent.
It's what?
I think it's absolutely excellent. I think he takes it super seriously.
I think he's going to win a slam. I think he's going to go all the way. He's going to learn how to temper his talent. You know, you need the weaponry.
Okay.
In order to.
But where is the? You also need the dexterity and the discipline within your game, because I remember a very famed quote.
But you developed that though. Agassi, right, came out lights out, hitting everything, the cover off the ball.
Okay.
And sometimes you get lucky, like you're saying with Dennis has to, and that 1 week will be 2 weeks, and it'll be a slam, and maybe he'll win a slam, and then we won't see him win anything for 2 or 3 years as his game evolves and matures. And he understands what has to happen in order, but you have to have the talent.
Yeah.
Even with the wrong things, sometimes you can you know go through things. Look at Roddick's U.S. Open victory. I mean, he was hitting everything as hard as he possibly could, or Del Potro at the U.S. Open.
But even with Roddick, and even with Delpo, they don't like this guy is hitting full cuts, forehand, back, everything, right? And this is an important quote, I think, famed quote that Federer had on the Chilean Fernando Gonzalez. And he said once, listen, I mean, they asked him, but I think he played him in Miami or something like that. And obviously he was getting a lot of fanfare there because of, you know, the Latin America feel. And he said that basically that's not my philosophy. I know it looks great, you know, to go. And you remember Gonzo lights out, you know what I mean? Hitting his forehand 110, 120, just obliterating the ball. He had that kind of that slice backhand, so he had the variety with that. Massive serve, massive forehand. And Federer said, you know what, man, that's not my philosophy. I don't think that's how you're going to win a lot of Grand Slams and a lot of big tournaments. And Federer doesn't play like that. He can hit the ball massive, especially when he was younger, but now it's more about that variety, and it's more about breaking guys down and compromising their position. Yes, if Dennis is completely unconscious for 2 weeks, kind of like Cilic was in the last three rounds of the U.S. Open in 14, and he beat, who was it, Burdick, Nishikori, and Federer in a row straight. Yeah, he could do that, but I just don't know. I have this feeling that right now Dennis, definitely his Achilles is his return backhand, because he doesn't really have that chip at all. So So he's going to have to definitely get that in his arsenal, kind of like a Federer-esque shot. And then he's going to, and but I think, I mean, I responded to somebody on Twitter saying that, and I think the reason why he goes full out is because he wants to set the tone in the rally as soon as possible, right? And he, and I feel like if he kind of chips it and massages it back and then tries to develop the, you know, the dialogue of the point, that sets him back. He just kind of like put on the gas, 0 to 60 as quickly as I can, and let's go. And whatever happens,
control the outcome.
Yeah, and whatever, you know, if I hit a winner, I do. If I hit the back of the fence, okay. But the next point, I'm gonna do it. And you know what? It's working pretty good because I'm only 19 and I'm 30 in the world, right?
Yeah, why should you remember our podcast last week? I said Shapovalov to the semifinal against Zverev. Zverev is going to teach him a lesson.
Yes,
which is exactly what happened because Zverev came out like that. He was hitting the cover off the ball, and Zverev has matured.
Yes,
you know, at 21 years old, he's now understanding some subtleties and nuances. He's just not strong enough, I don't think, physically to do it a best of five for a slam, you know, yet. But I think he's working his way there.
Now, do you think? So that's a great comparison, and that's, I mean, that analysis was spot on because you couldn't have got it better than you did, but. So Zverev for me has a lot of firepower, but I think Dennis can hits the ball even bigger, man. You're telling me that right now.
And he's lefty.
Yeah, and he's lefty. And if you looked at, I don't know if you looked at some of the miles per hour that they had, but Shapovalov had the most ground speed from him, team, and Zverev throughout the event. And he's, I think he's smaller than, I think he's around the same height as team. I know Zverev's obviously a giant at 6'6", but. He's not that big of a guy, but he hits hammering the ball. So that's what I'm saying. I just don't know. I mean, I don't think he's, again, he can change because he's got time on his side. He's only 19. But I have this feeling that when he steps back, his ranking is also going to go backwards. That's just my opinion.
He doesn't have to step back. He has to just add a couple chips here and there and
elongate
points a couple of shots and that's all he needs to do. His threshold needs to just increase a little bit, and he can do that. I think he will do that, but I do think he will be more of a flashy type of player. But I think
which is great. Yeah,
I think he could probably win something. I think he'll put himself in a position,
no question,
like Wawrinka has done. You know,
absolutely.
But Wawrinka didn't do it till 31 years old. You know, it took him a long time.
Yes.
But that's the maturity of the shot selection and the understanding of what really has to happen.
We're definitely
hitting the gym and all that. You know, who knows what he can do?
We're no question looking at a top 10 player. And I think that is without a doubt within the next 18 months.
Right, which Russell Westbrook is, you know.
Absolutely.
You look at Russell Westbrook, he's an MVP.
But he's not a legend. Right,
he has
zero championships.
And you know, as journalists, we can't make the mistake of also comparing everybody to Federer and Nadal and Djokovic.
No, of
you know, these guys have been there. It's ridiculous. You know, I think this unfair comparisons in that those guys were playing at a high level for 14 years or something ridiculous. You know, it's been a long time. So to try to put someone in those shoes is impossible. You know, it's more like a comparison to, you know, Marin Cilic, you know, is that's their next goal, is can Zverev and Shapovalov be better than the, you know, the finalist one slam, two slam type of guys that are out there. There's only a few of them, so, or a couple of them, but.
Of course. All right. Well, that's the gist. And anybody out there want to get back to us on that Shapovalov-Westbrook comparison, let us know. We'd love to continue that dialogue on Twitter. Now moving into the women's preview for Roma. Again, Halep right up there at number one. She plays the winner of Azarenka Osaka. That's going to be, I think, a tough one for Halep, especially if it's Azarenka. We have Suarez Novara, who's a former finalist here, against Donna Vecic. That's another tough first round. Then we have Pavlyuchenkova versus Madison Keys, another tough first one. Then you have Steven Strykova, another tough one. We have Sarah Errani, who you know is going to be playing really well here as a wild card. And then we have Caro Garcia. Pretty loaded, you know, first quarter here for the women. I think for me that for me that everything that I'm seeing in this section, I'm going to be going with actually Azarenka to do some damage here. Really like Azarenka. I think she's in a great headspace. You know, she's committed now to a full schedule. You know, I don't think clay is her best surface, but I think, you know, she's developing, obviously, and maturing overall as a player. She's been putting in the work. She's, as I said last week, she's fit as a fiddle. I think Osaka, as great as she's going to be, I think clay, she has no idea what she's doing on the surface as at this point, kind of like Sharapova as a youngster. I like Azarenka to get through Osaka, get through Halep, as well as make the semifinals here. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important that that Halep tries to make a run here, but I think there's a huge problem that Azarenka's in her way. What's going to happen is going to be very interesting, and I think very telling for the way this all interprets and unfolds. Rome heading into Roland Garros, you're going to get some sort of build up here. In that, if Halep can get through, I feel like Halep becomes obviously a favorite at Roland Garros, and if Azarenka goes through, then I feel like Azarenka actually becomes a favorite at Roland Garros. So I think it's a very, very interesting and twisted type of dialogue here, as that we don't know really, although we've seen Azarenka play high level tennis, we don't know if she can maintain it, if she can be consistent, and so it all is still new for us again in this quote unquote second career. But I love your pick, but I'm gonna go with Halep in this section. I think she's the class one. I think she's a little bit more desperate, believe it or not, and I think she's going to make her way through into the semifinal from this section.
Okay. Now moving on, we have Muguruza as the third seed. Again, a former French Open champion. She's going to be looking. I think a lot of players obviously are going to be gearing up hard this week because, you know, French Open's in a couple weeks' time. We also have in this section the struggling Sibulkova. Maria Sharapova, former winner here, is back in action, looking to definitely gain some steam. And then we have the reigning French Open winner, Ostapenko, who you know is going to be looking, I think, not only for a result here, but also for some points. Because, I mean, Zverev, for instance, let's get back to the men for a second, is in a great place, right, Parsa? Because he's defending Rome champion, right? But he just won Madrid. So those two cancel out each other. So even if he loses first round of Rome, he's not going to lose any points because they're just going to cancel each other out. He stays where he is. He can rest up, and he's ready for Roland Garros, which I kind of suspect is what's going to happen, but we'll get into that in a bit. For me, I think Ostapenko is going to be, you know, burning it hard this week, and I think that she's the one who's going to make the Final Four here. How about yourself?
She needs it, right, Nima? What do you think?
No, there's no question about it. I think she has to. She needs results. She needs points because, if she loses early in the French, which I don't think she will, she's going to, you know, drop quite a bit. So I think, you know, definitely look for her to at least make the Final Four here.
And, you know, what do you think from Sharapova's point of view?
I think for me, Sharapova.
There's a couple of desperate players in here, right?
Yeah, and I think
Sharapova, Konta is definitely desperate.
Yeah, and I think I like what I'm seeing. A lot of people are against, you know, Sharapova for many different reasons, but again, man, if it wasn't for Serena Williams, I know we can't really make that argument because Serena's, and again, we should talk about her quickly because again, she's not in this drop, pulled out, citing again that she's not ready for competition, and she's basically only going to the French Open with no prep, no tournament prep. But we'll get into that in a bit. But I think that if, you know, Serena wasn't around, Sharapova would have, I think, 15 Grand Slams, minimal. I mean, I think I can say that with confidence. And she's playing well, and I just think it's a matter of time before she gets back into the top 10. I think she's what, about 50, 52, 55 in the world. And I think she definitely needs to get that ranking up, get seeded at a major so she can get out of these tough seeding right off the bat matchups, right, with different players. And we'll see how it goes. But I don't think she's going to
She's not a contender, though.
Not yet. No, absolutely
no,
not.
She's not a contender. That's the thing. You know, and who knows if it's the know, what she was found guilty for, if that's what actually made the difference or not. And so I think that's where all that controversy comes up. You know, it's one of those things that I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. You know, to talk about the elephant in the room, I mean, that's ultimately why we question Sharapova. And, you know, as far as this section goes, you know, for me, I have to believe that it's going to be desperation, which there's quite a few here. But I feel like Ostapenko, if she's going to make a run and she's going to defend, she's going to have to build her confidence here. And I think also with you, Ostapenko goes through.
Okay. We're going now into quarter number three, which is led by Pliskova, who had some earlier success on the clay, winning in Stuttgart, which again is not, you know, a tournament I think that is going to, you know, do much in terms of, I mean, like results for Roland Garros. Then we have Svitolina as the number four seed. We have Kerber, who has been kind of quiet, right, this clay court season. I'm not really sure what she's been up to. We have Kazakina, who's another up-and-comer, is going to be dangerous. So we have some decent players here. We have Kiki Berkins, who just made the finals of Madrid. You know, Maria Sakkari, who's another one of my favorites out there, who has played some great ball. Daniel Collins qualified again for this event. Cristina, I don't know. I mean, and let's mention parts of that. Svitolina is the defending champion, so I think she's going to have some mojo. Definitely the conditions are suitable to her arsenal. And I think for that reason, I think the feel-good factor is going to be here for Svitolina. I'm going with her to the Final Four. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't argue with you there either. I think that this is Svitolina's tournament. And I think, again, she's got to build herself. And I think we're going to get something decently similar to what last year holds. And if that's the case, then I've got Svitolina here too for the semi.
Okay. Now, as we move to quarter number four, Venus Williams. Again, been, I think, pretty quiet on the clay court season. During the clay court season this year, we have Vesnina, Kuznetsova, who's still battling out there, Kontaveit, Coco Vandeweghe, who has made it clear that she doesn't care about clay.
But plays well on it.
Yeah, plays well, pretty well on it, yeah. And I think on faster clay anyway, court. We have Sam Stosur, who's, again, a pretty good clay quarter, but aging, definitely. And then we have Wozniacki. How do you like to say it? Wozniacki?
Wozniacki, yeah.
So I think, you know, Parsa, I'm going to go with, I like to mix it up, and I'm going with Kontaveit to make the semifinals in this section. I think she's ready for a surprise, around 30 in the world, a nice hitter of the ball, and I think that it's a good enough section. I think she gets by Coco Vandeweghe, and then from there, the draw is not super tough. You got Venus Williams and Wozniacki, who's clay is not her best surface, so I definitely think there's a major opportunity in this section for somebody to advance to the Final Four. For me, that's going to be Kontaveit. How about yourself?
Yeah, and again, I completely agree with you, except I don't think Kontaveit beats her first-round opponent in Vandeweghe, and I think Vandeweghe is the one who takes the opportunity. So I'm going to have Vandeweghe for reasons that are she has a disdain for it, and if she has a disdain for it, then she kind of cuts herself some slack, and so she hits freer, and she has the potential to play better on the clay. If she'll be just a tad bit patient and a little bit more professional with the freewheeling hitting mindset, then you know, I think I'm going to have her going through here in my semi.
Okay. Now, and so just to recap here, I have Azarenka, Ostapenko, Svitolina, and Kontaveit as my final four. I have Azarenka advancing to the finals over Ostapenko. I have Svitolina taking on Kontaveit. And then I have Svitolina repeating her title.
Oh, very good, Nima. So I've got Halep against Ostapenko in a rematch of the Roland Garros final last year. I'm going to have this time, I think Halep is going to win. I think she gets into the final. And she's going to play. I've got here Svitolina versus Coco Vandeweghe. I'm going to obviously have Svitolina advancing over Vandeweghe. And I think we're going to have a preview of the French Open final. I think it's going to be Halep versus Svitolina. And I think Svitolina is going to win this one. And I think Svitolina is also going to win Roland Garros. So here we go.
Okay. So we'll see how that transpires. I think it's going to be a good week of tennis, especially on the the women's side, because a lot of players are going to be hungry, you know, to get their footing ready for your second major. So, Parsa, now as we move into the men's draw, again, interesting because this has always been that kind of debate, right? Like, oh, Rafa, you know, cruises on the clay, then doesn't do historically as well at Madrid, even though he's won it 5 times, but there's been a lot of years where he hasn't won it. And then now he's coming in here in, again, very fairer conditions that are not like Madrid, and we'll get to that at the end of the show. So Rafa opens up here against either Verdasco or Zoomer. I think the Verdasco match could be interesting, but I think Verdasco is carrying some sort of an injury. So if it is Zoomer, I see no problems there for Nadal as he moves forward. We have Shapovalov, who has a tough opener against Burdick, who is struggling right now. Do you think that Shapovalov can get through Burdick there in the first round? Or do you think he's going to have a little bit of a hangover from Madrid?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that you know, it's not the easiest match there. I think that Burdick is a higher percentage hitter than he is, believe it or not.
Yes.
It just really depends on whether Burdick can, you know, if he's got the good vibes, the confidence that he has, which does bring up, Nima, speaking of, you were going to bring up the calendar placement of Madrid. You know, what do we really think about that calendar placement, in that Shapovalov is coming in with what you seemingly think is a great result for him in his stage of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But how much does that translate to Rome and then to Roland Garros, which is all at sea level?
Nothing.
Does Madrid even belong there? You know, does it tell us anything about Shapovalov?
No, absolutely not. And that's something that we wanted to discuss at the beginning of the show. And quickly, for me, Parsa, I don't even think that Madrid should be on the calendar. You know what? For anything, you know, put it where Hamburg was, because that didn't work out either. So you can put maybe back-to-back weeks of, you know, Madrid as a 500 and then Hamburg as a 500. I'm sure, you know, the Leonardo Mayers of the world and Pablo Cuevases and those guys, you know, Carreño Busta and Batista Agut and all those guys will eat, Del Bonis, all of those guys will love those tournaments and rack up points. And I think that's great for them. But when you're looking at connecting the dots and having the flow of the clay court season, where you have sea level events where, you know, they're conducive, like even Estoril or Barcelona and Monte Carlo and Rome, I think that's what you need, man. And I think you got to get to another location. I mean, the only reason Madrid is even on the calendar is because Jan Tyriak is a billionaire. And he said, listen, guys, here's all the money you need. What else do you want? He built a stellar venue and it's all this futuristic stuff. But the tournament in itself shows. I mean, how many tournaments has Nadal won in Barcelona? How many has he won in Monte Carlo? How many has he won in Rome? How many has he won at the French? Don't you think that if Madrid was around the same, you know, playing conditions, that he would have won at least 8 or 9 there too? Why not, right? Put the tournament in Valencia. Put it somewhere where, put it in Mallorca. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
It's, and I definitely think that he would have won 8 or 9 of those as well too. I mean, it's hard for him to win all 5 8 or 9 times. That's why you kind of, I don't think he's ever done that. I don't think he's won ever all 5 in the same year, if I'm not mistaken, right? So, but I think that's definitely a reason why Madrid needs to go. Because again, you had Kvitova winning, right? But is she a threat at the French Open? No. Do I think Zverev is a threat at the French Open? No. Do I think that, like, look at all the years that Federer won at Madrid. Did he ever win the French? He did once. But the years that he won Madrid, Nadal took him. You know what I'm saying? So it's never really connected. But the winners of Rome usually win the French. The winners of Monte Carlo usually win the French. The winners of Rome usually win the French. The winners of Madrid, unless the name is Nadal, have usually not won the French. So I think that there's really no, you know, cohesiveness or synergy that carries over. And I think it's just not where it should be. And I think it's a bogus event in the sense of the conditions. And that's why they flip-flopped it, right? If you remember a few years back, Madrid was the second one, Rome was the first one. But they said, listen, man, we need conditions. Why did they do that, Parsa? They did that because the players are like, listen, man, we need conditions that really help us prepare for the biggest tournament on the surface.
Right.
So Madrid is really only there because of money. And I've heard that they even want to sell the event, but the only reason, that's a lot of money, right, for somebody to buy it. And I think Tyriac is definitely looking to unload this, but he doesn't want to lose all of his money. So, the right person comes along, then it's going to definitely happen. So that's my opinion. But we were talking about this this quarter here.
Yeah, does it translate really? So in this section, what does it mean for Shapovalov? Is he going to be still hitting the cover off the ball? Yeah, absolutely. It just means that the ball that he's hitting so hard is not going to have as much value. And so it really comes down to where's Berdych at? And Berdych has been struggling. And I think Shapovalov, not in flashy fashion, grinds this one out by hitting the right shot at the right time. So I think I'm going to have him going through. But this is the section of Nadal and team. And I think that's what everyone's going to be wanting to see. And I think that's where it's going to go. But I think it's a revenge time. I think Nadal gets through to the semi in this section.
I definitely agree with you there. And for me, I mean, listen, team, the conditions in Madrid definitely suit his game. Because he's, like I said, he's got that flat backhand, and he's made the finals in Madrid 2 years in a row. And I think, I mean, obviously he had a good tournament last year in Rome as well. He's going to have two good tournaments on clay. He's a clay court specialist. There's no quite like, but he's got a pretty tough draw because he's playing the winner of Fognini and Maffi first up. You know, both of those guys can beat anybody on the given day. You know, Fognini, again, you were very right. He bounced from Madrid really quickly to get some espressos and get ready for this tournament here. And then you have some other characters here that can cause some damage. But it's without a question for me, and I would be shocked if this doesn't happen, but Nadal all the way to the semifinals. It doesn't matter if team is there in the quarters, whoever is there, it's going to be Nadal in the final four. And I'm presuming that's who you have as well too, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so we're moving on to quarter number two. We have Dimitrov, who again, I mean, I don't think he's going to be top eight by the end of the season, if you ask me at this point. We had Jack Sock take out new father in David Ferrer 6-3, 6-4 today. So Sock has advanced. He's in this section who can play great on this. And I think he played well here last year too. I think he lost to Nadal, but it was a pretty good match. We have Joker against Dolgopolov, who's such, he's a crafty guy, and they play each other pretty tough. So who knows what's going to happen there. I definitely think this is, I think, Parsa, a good section for Djokovic, because he's got Dimitrov, who's flaky. He's got Nishikori, Lopez, who can be dangerous. Khachanov, Cole Schreiber, again, who can be dangerous. Sock, who can play well on clay, but he's had a terrible year. I think he's, 4-8 on the season, something like that. Isner, Delbonis, Basilashvili, who's another guy who plays well on the surface. But I have this feeling, more so than I've had any other week on the clay, that Joker is going to do something and face Nadal in the semifinals. I don't think he's going to win that match, but I think he gains a little bit even more confidence here. I'd like to hear what you think, but I'm taking Joker to the final four, even though this is relatively a pretty loaded section. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I still, I'm not sure what you see besides, you have good vibes and hopes.
Yes.
But I don't think beating Nishikori is necessarily a surprise. Yes, he's had a couple of good weeks, but it's been a struggle for Nishikori too. He's on the heels of some bad tennis before as well. So,
yes.
Djokovic, I don't know what he's proven to me yet besides beating a countryman in Lajovic, soundly at Monte Carlo. Everything else has still kind of been a flub for him. So, I'm not sure that he capitalizes on. I find someone like Isner going to be difficult for him.
Okay.
I'm not sure if he has the speed and the elasticity anymore to deal with Isner's pace that he's been hitting with, and returning those serves and being able to maneuver the ball like Djokovic has in the past because of his elite's movements and his feel of the ball. I'm not sure that Djokovic has that.
Mm-hmm.
And if all worse comes to worse, and he does get there, I think Dimitrov still beats him in the quarter. For me, I'm going to have Dimitrov in this section. And only because I think he's going to be steady, and I think he's going to be able to defend quite a bit. And I think he's just going to literally grind people into the ground until he gets decimated by Nadal in the semi.
Yeah, and it's interesting because for the most part, you know, Grigor has been terrible on clay the last few years. Yep. I think he's lost, if I'm not mistaken, and somebody can correct me on this because I haven't checked, but he's lost at least 2 years, if not 3 years, in a row in the first round of the French Open. He hasn't done much on the surface, man. I mean, realistically, hard courts, grass a little bit, indoor have been his best surfaces in the last few years.
And yeah, because he doesn't move like a clay courter.
No.
You know, he grew up in California.
But he's a super athletic guy. And right. he played a lot at the Mouratoglou too in France. So, I mean, he's played on clay. He knows, but again, I think that he's kind of honed his skills more to a fast court player. And that's, you know, that's what's kind of holding him back. But again, I got Joker going through here. We'll see how it transpires. Moving on to quarter number three, we have, you know, Anderson, who made the semis of Madrid again. What's he doing in the semis of a Masters 1000 on clay? Well, it's Madrid, so that stuff can happen. We had Steve Johnson. Notable result today, Parson. I watched it. To me, Steve Johnson, I mean, I know he's won Houston the last couple of years. He's got that feel-good factor with everything that's happened with his father as of last year, and I root for him a lot now. But, I mean, he took out Wawrinka today 4-4. And I know Stan's coming back. He's had the knee injury. But, I mean, this might be the last year for Wawrinka. And if he somehow, you know, because if he loses in the first, if he loses early in Paris, he's out of the top 100. And that, right. And then he's got to go on to hard courts and grass where he's terrible. And then hard courts, which is super tough on the body. If he starts questioning himself and he's got like a lot, you know, tens of millions of dollars and he's three-time Grand Slam winner and he's had an amazing, he's a Hall of Famer, man. Like, what is he really, like, he has nothing to prove at this point. He's not going to win 10 slams. Best, he's going to get one more. He just kind of wants to come back and he loves to play. This could be the beginning of the end, realistically. And, I mean, Steve Johnson is by no means a clay courter, but he took him out today. So we'll see what happens with Stan. He's got basically now, I don't know if he takes the wild card next week into Geneva or Nice. Probably play Geneva because it's a hometown event. But anyways, we got Anderson, we got Johnson, we got Ryan Harrison, who took out Sugita today, and Cilic. So this, to me, is a very wide open section. We have, who else do we have here? We have Richard Gasquet, who had some earlier success on the clay this year. And I think I like Gasquet here. He's got Benoit Paire, who is going to be looking to do some damage. I don't think clay is the best surface for Paire. I think he's a little bit better of a fast court player. We have Schwartzman, who showed some signs of, you know, reviving last week, but then Nadal took him out easily in Madrid. For me, I'm taking Frenchman Richard Gasquet to make the semifinals here. How about yourself? Wow.
I mean, it's a great pick because, you know, it's just a pick that it makes the most sense.
I think so.
But this is going to be my wild card section, believe it or not. And a lot is riding on tomorrow morning's match, first thing. But it's for me, it's Jared Donaldson who has the ability to sling some shots by some guys on the surface.
Okay.
Who knows and is confident on the movement of the surface. And I think he's very comfortable on clay more than any other surface.
Okay.
And I have a feeling that if he can get through his first round against Pablo Carreño Busta, that this could be a little bit of a shocking dark horse opportunity to do something for the first time. And because I feel like taking a risk, I'm going to take that risk. I'm going to go with Jared Donaldson. And I think the reason why is because of what I said. I think he's sort of due. And I think I personally always underestimate him, believe it or not. And he always surprises me. And I think this time I'm going to ride his bandwagon and I'm going to be in it with him while everyone else is surprised.
Okay. Yeah, I love Donaldson's game too, man. I think he's a very hardworking guy and he can do some damage here. But I definitely would look more towards him at the hard court season. I think he's going to do some damage this summer. So moving on to quarter number four.
Look at those matchups though, right?
Yeah.
You got to look at those matchups.
Absolutely. And I think
if he can get through Carreño Busta, who doesn't hit the crap out of the ball, he's going to beat Steve Johnson on the surface, and he's going to beat Kevin Anderson on the surface too. So that's why it's a little bit of a cheat getting there. Sure. But we'll see.
Okay. Moving on to quarter number four, we have Delpo back in action once again. Won a match or two last week in Madrid before bowing out. We have Chorich, who's had a very nice year. I think that's a very tasty matchup right there. Borna Chorich versus Stefano Tsitsipas from Greece. Qualified again. I mean, what a clay court season this youngster is having. And I think watch out for him at the French. That to me is tough. I still think that Delpo can get through both of these guys. We got Zverev. Let's see how he, you know, translates. Now, this guy's won BMW Open, Madrid Open. Is he going 3-for-3? I highly doubt it. TFO, I don't think. I think Zverev can win a few rounds here, but I think he'll just, I think he's maybe run out of gas or he's going to have some mental fatigue. For that reason, Goffin is here. Lucas Pouille, who has surprisingly had a very poor clay court season for my standards, in my books. But I'm going to go with Delpo, another feel-good factor, make the semifinals here. How about yourself?
Yeah, definitely a tricky one because I would normally favor Zverev, but, you know, he's definitely got to be fatigued a little bit. So, tough to pick, though. You know, TFO looks enticing to me. The Greek guy, Stefanos. How do you say his last name?
Tsitsipas. Yeah.
He looks very favorable. And Del Potro doesn't actually look that favorable to me. I think clay doesn't really suit him.
No,
And the way he plays anymore because the backhand, even when he is hitting it on the hard court, it's a little bit flatter.
Yeah.
On the clay, I'm not sure. I think he can get worked wide on the court a little bit more, and I'm not sure he's going to be able to cover that at this stage of his career. So for the lack of anything, I'm going to have a Tsitsipas semifinal here to play Donaldson in the other semifinal to see who goes to the first Grand Slam.
If you get that right, man, dinner's on me. I'm coming to New York. We're going to get
a good dinner. I can't wait.
So
I think you were going to come to shake my hand, by the way, if Zverev won.
Yeah. So I got to make two trips
in two
consecutive weeks. Okay, so I have my final four is Nadal, Djokovic, Gasquet, and Delpo. I'm going Nadal-Delpo final with Nadal winning the title. How about yourself?
I'm going with Nadal, obviously dismantling Dimitrov, and then we're going to have a Tsitsipas-Donaldson semi. And I think Tsitsipas is going to get into the final, and I think he's going to be demolished by Nadal. But not without a fight. I'm going to say something like a surprising 7-5, 6-1 or 2 in the second set for Nadal. Okay.
Very good. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to another action-packed week of tennis in Roma, as I like to call it, instead of Rome. It just sounds a little bit better. With that said, Parson and I will be back soon to talk more tennis with you guys. In the meantime, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs to all the Grand Slam events for the rest of the year. Parson, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody out there for listening. Make sure to follow Parson on Twitter and Instagram, as well as myself at Tennis Connected, both on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can follow all of the Rome coverage this week on tennisconnected.com, and we'll check back with you guys very soon. Thanks again for listening, and also please download this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment.